All right. Welcome in. KSO Post Game Live. Fan joining us for the second consecutive game. We got to bring in the big guns for the big, uncomfortable, tight ones. Fortunately, Saturday was nowhere near as uncomfortable as what we just experienced here in Bramlage Coliseum tonight. Also, get your comments, questions in now because I don't know if you guys are aware, there's some snow coming. I got to try and beat that back to Wichita before it starts. That way my wife isn't worried about me. We'll get on it. But big one for K-State tonight. They win their sixth consecutive game. We had known after Jerome Tang secured his fourth straight win in this streak, it was the most consecutive wins in Big 12 play that he had had since coming to K-State. Now he gets to six. This is the most that K-State has had in a win streak in Big 12 play since 2019, when they won nine straight Big 12 games on their way to a Big 12 title. The interesting part about that was that was split up in the middle because K-State took a break, went to College Station, and lost to Texas A&M. So we don't have to worry about losers tonight, though, fan, because K-State once again is a winner. They take down Arizona 73-70. It was uncomfortable at the end, especially when people know what Arizona does in late-game situations, and they got a heave off at the very end of the game because Brennan Hausen missed a free throw. Max Jones missed two free throws. Didn't matter. K-State was the better team tonight, if that's possible, in a game that was mired by bad shooting, horrible officiating. The Cats found a way. The good Cats, the ones in purple, and they got it done against Arizona. Lot to go after in this game, but I'll let you open up with whatever you think stood out the most.
Well, the key was the grit that it took to win this game, because you win a game when you have 0.95 points per possession against an Arizona team that is the second best offense in the league, efficiency-wise, and number 14 in the country, and you hold them to 0.91, which I think is their worst of the season. So you do that, you go 1-for-19 from three, which is 5.3%, which is the worst three-point shooting for a K-State team since they went 0-for against Wisconsin in the Beasley NCAA tournament game. And I'm pretty sure that's probably the worst shooting from three-point range in a win for K-State. And I thought threes were going to be the key in this game. I thought K-State would have to outshoot Arizona. Now, the good thing is they only finished 4% worse than Arizona, because Arizona went 2-for-22. So the teams combined for 3-of-41 from three. That's a dreadful night, and it's really going to be the team that makes the plays down the stretch. You know, K-State had a nice 6-point lead. Arizona goes on a 10-2 run. K-State answers with a 6-0 run to get the lead back, and then makes the plays down the stretch. So just a big win, a huge win, and now the fourth quad one win in this stretch for now. You know, quad wins can change, but that's the fourth quad win one win in this stretch, which firmly puts K-State in NCAA conversation as well.
Yeah, you point out the three-point shooting. I was with you. I thought the three was going to be a big part of this game. Arizona's not a great shooting team. That's where you thought K-State might have an advantage, because they'd shot so well in the previous five games in this streak. But both teams, Arizona included, had shot a little better from three during Big 12 play, but both bottom out tonight. And it's one of those where, to get as hot as K-State is, they're playing much better basketball. They are a good basketball team right now. But you also have to get a little lucky sometimes to get your magic rolling. And they were fortunate that on a night where they didn't have it shooting the ball, neither did their opponent. And as we've talked about, K-State is playing like the best team in the Big 12 right now. They did all the other things better than Arizona this evening, and that's what was able to get the job done. Now, I would throw in, I did keys to the game for this week, and shooting was on there, but the other two things I had were turnovers. I thought that was an avenue where K-State might get an advantage. Turned out to be huge. K-State only turns it over 10 times, Arizona 17. And then I mentioned that when you play these big games, you need everybody to chip in. You need the role guys to keep doing it. And C.J. Jones and Moby Ikeguruka gave you about as much as you could ask for guys like that tonight.
Yeah, they were huge. C.J. Jones really in the first half helped carry the team, him and Doug McDaniel. And then the second half, David Gasson really played well down the stretch before fouling out, battling to that foul trouble. And then Moby with the big steal and the dunk to put K-State back up six was huge and a big point in the game that they needed that play. And you talked about turnovers. K-State outscored Arizona 23-10 off turnovers and only got outscored 10-12 in fast break points. Arizona was number 15 in the country and top of the Big 12 in points off transition with 15 points per game. And K-State holds them under that average at 12, kind of the difference. Points in the paint are pretty even. K-State 46, Arizona 44. Arizona wins on the boards 46-33. Offensive rebounding rate 33% to 17.5%. And a narrow margin of 13-6 in second chances. But I think K-State made up with that just for with those extra twos and getting out and scoring off those turnovers Arizona had. So K-State washed the rebounding battle by winning the turnover battle. And I think you're right. That was probably the key to this game.
Yeah, and I would also point out to David Gasson doing what he did, scoring the ball, 16 points in 23 minutes tonight because he was in foul trouble in the first half, and then he obviously fouls out much earlier in the game than you would want because, look, and we'll get ready to get into the comments here, but everybody knows I got to do this. This is my thing. I like to keep them honest and accountable. That was horse crap officiating tonight. I mean, we have not seen something that bad in a long, long time. I mean, it was clearly not an A or a B crew that the Big 12 was able to round up tonight. TV Teddy Valentine was in the house, Kelly Self as well. I think the other guy was Michael Greenstein. I'd never heard of him before. They were all terrible. They had a rough night. I said to Drew afterwards, I said, man, do you think these guys are going to walk out of here tonight and think to themselves, you know what, we did our jobs well tonight. We had a good one. Because I can tell you, and most of you can attest that are watching this, I don't walk away from every KSO show we do and go, that was a good show. I feel good about what I put forth. I'm well aware of when I suck and when there are clunkers. I'm fully aware of when that takes place. The refs were bad tonight, and it ended up getting to a point where I think both teams dealt with it and that the flow of the game was off because of it. But when there were influential oddities or idiocies that the refs partook in, it affected K-State in a bigger way. So the fact that they were able to overcome that is a big deal, not because, you know, I want to keep dumping on the refs who were atrocious tonight, but because that's something that we talked about even a month ago in certain games that this team did not overcome. And when Coleman Hawkins had the goaltending call wiped off the board late in the first half, instead of pouting and letting the game get away from them, K-State went on a run instantly that tied it up, and then they closed the half on a 13-0 run in the final three and a half. They let it fuel them and get them to play in a better direction, and that is one of the biggest differences between the team right now versus the team even a month and a half ago that was playing in Fort Worth and Stillwater or at home against Texas Tech or whoever you want to name. That to me is another signifier of just how much different this team is and why you should believe after beating Arizona tonight, a lot of things are still possible for this team.
Yeah, very much so. And the real key is finding ways to win a game when you shoot that poorly from three. I didn't think it was possible. If you'd have told me before the game K-State's 1-19, I would have said we lose by 15 to 20 points more than likely. So finding those ways to win. And really to me, there's a question, what's the change? What changed this team around? Doug McDaniel changed this team around. And this was the Doug McDaniel game. 24 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 steals. And the key was Doug wasn't great from 3. He was 1-for-5, but he was 9-for-17 on twos. And he was making those little runners. We've seen him miss those this year. But when Doug is making those kind of plays and finding ways for this team to score on offense, then being the head of the snake on defense, something Jerome Tang mentioned with Marquise Noel in year one, Doug has become that guy on the defensive end, leading the defense. And K-State did a really great job on two really good guards, and Caleb Love and Jordan, what's his last name? Why am I flaking?
Bradley.
Jordan Bradley, yeah. Two really good guys. K-State did a nice job on those. They scored 13 and 6 respectively, but it took them 26 shots to do it. You'll take that every time.
Yep, that was they did so much good. And you mentioned Doug Steeles. He had a lot of great ones, a lot of important ones, maybe the biggest being with 6 seconds left when Arizona tries flinging the ball to midcourt, and he goes up and gets it. Another guy that had a massive steal tonight out of nowhere. And there are many things that in my media seat gets me to really act out. Moby Ikeguruka's steal and dunk was absolutely one of them. I don't know that I'd experienced something like that since go back a handful of years, Bruce's final year when Marquise Noel hit the deep three against Wichita State. And I think D.Y. was punching my legs under the table like, holy crap, can you believe it? And look, nobody was more excited about that than me, big WSU hater right here. But that was huge. And those guys absolutely stepped up. Let's get into the comments now because we'll try and get done with this around 10 o'clock tonight. Again, trying to beat the storm and everything here. But a lot of people are asking it, and we've talked about it a lot. But we'll start with Brandon's question. How many more wins for an NCAA tourney berth after this win? This win is exactly what we talked about when we start counting what needs to be done. And we say each win really shrinks what you have to do. It makes it a lot more attainable. And tonight's win feels like double any other win in this stretch because you beat a team that very well could win the Big 12 this year, and you took care of business. Theoretically, if we go off what we've been saying, we said 6-2 entering tonight to finish the regular season. Probably a win in Kansas City, go 1-1, you're probably okay. Theoretically, 5 wins left, but Fan, you're a little bit more attuned to that than everybody else, so I'll let you give your take.
Well, you want to get that 19-14 mark would be finishing with 2 losses in the regular season, then going 1-1 in Kansas City. And that would put K-State squarely on the bubble. I looked up from 2019 to last season, 4 Power Conference teams have made it with that 14-loss mark on the season. And then you have to look at the dynamics. How many quad one wins do you have? K-State now has 4. They have 2 quad two wins. If they win 5 more games to get to that 19-win mark or 6 more games, that's probably going to be at least 1 more quad one win and 2 or 3 more quad two wins. That combination of 10 quad one and quad two wins with 5 quad one wins would put them in a good conversation. Now, they're going to have 2 bad losses for sure. WSU and LSU probably are going to be quad three losses at this point. I don't think any other ones are going to slip to that point. Even Oklahoma State on the road is a bad loss, but it will stay in quad two. So that's the key. You got to look at kind of the resume metrics. K-State has been ranking in about the 70s in the resume metrics. You want to get that back up into the 50s. They'll jump quite a bit with tonight's win. So that you don't want to get more than 14 losses for sure. So if K-State gets the 15 losses, they're in trouble. If they could somehow lose 1 more regular season game, that would be pretty amazing. I think they're in. I think they're in that scenario. 2 more regular season losses is tough. 3 more regular season losses, they have to win the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah. If they finish this thing and go 6-1 now the rest of the way, I think they absolutely should be in. But as we talked about, one of the things that is going to give K-State a boost or an advantage that some teams may not have is Jerome Tang and Coleman Hawkins, I think, give them a boost in terms of if you're thinking about, well, you know, TV ratings or what's important to the momentum of the NCAA. Those two guys are well-known figures in college basketball. Those are characters you want to be playing in March. But to talk about one of those characters, let's answer Riley's question because I think he plays a large role in it. How do you feel about the 3-point trouble that we saw tonight? From a singular basis on just Coleman Hawkins, I'm a little bit more concerned based off of what it looked like as a team. Not overly concerned because you're due for bad games here and there. They overcame it. They were able to find a way to win. And, you know, some of the looks, for the most part, I wasn't all that concerned about. I didn't think they were bad. But Coleman Hawkins specifically, that was troubling to see tonight.
Yeah, he had some good looks. And, frankly, a lot of them weren't close. And that is Disappointing and a bit concerning. He had been, I think, 36, 37% in Big 12 play coming into the game. So he'd been proven as a decent shooter. But it seemed to me like this was probably a game for both teams coming off pretty emotional games on Saturday, K-State beating KU in a rivalry game. Arizona overcoming their only loss in the last 15 or 16 games to Texas Tech at home, beating Texas Tech. So it seemed like two teams that maybe had a little bit of tired legs in this game, and that I think that shows up in how you play from three, and two teams that really put it all on the line on defense. So I'm not real concerned. K-State, I think, had shot 35% or better from three in the last six games, and I'll take that. And I think three or four of those were 40% or better. They're going to shoot well. They get some time off, and then they're going to go to BYU and Utah. That little weekend, Saturday, Monday stretch in Utah. So hopefully they get those legs back, because those are two teams, especially BYU, where you're going to get some open looks from three. You got to make them.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of those games coming up, Mitchell asks, can the success continue on the road? And that's really the big question now, because you look at K-State kind of already answered that once, going to the toughest place to play in the Big 12 this year, Hilton Coliseum, and beating Iowa State by 19, then backing it up and winning at Arizona State. But winning on the road is so tough and seems like such a random thing in college basketball at times that I think they do kind of have to go and prove that they can do it all over again. Now, them playing as well as they did bought them a cushion of, if you go 1-1 in Utah this upcoming weekend, it doesn't stunt your momentum, I don't think, and it still keeps everything very much in play. But this is going to be big, and they are going to have to really prove themselves that they can find what they had against Iowa State and Arizona State and replicate it now against BYU and Utah. Because if you win both of those, then this thing isn't slowing down, because your next game's against a real crappy team at home. You go on the road to a team that is pretty flaky, then you come back and face another real crappy team at home. At that point, you've got a substantial win streak in front of you, and you would find it tough for the way this team's been playing to lose those type of games.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be big to continue winning on the road. I mean, this team has won two in a row on the road, but they had lost 15 straight on the road before that. So to get that confidence carrying over, and just, I think the way they're playing, I feel good about them winning some more road games. But is it going to be enough to get them in that NCAA tournament conversation come March? And that's going to be the key. BYU is going to be tough. You know, K-State played out there last year, had a tough game, competed, but then couldn't finish it down the stretch. It's going to be our first trip to Utah in a long time, I believe. So that's going to be one they've got to take.
Well, they did go to lose to BYU last year, but you might have already been in bed. It started so late.
Yes. Yes, but they competed in that game.
Yeah.
Now, question in there. I think Doug just landed hard. I think it's more of a bruise. He did the full lap around the stadium after the game. So if you're worried about Doug, he was walking around the stadium after the game. He didn't go to the locker room or go to the trainer right away. So I think he is okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And Joe adds in there, he didn't look too injured celebrating. Well, winning cures all, as they say. Yes. So that's a big thing. One other question that I wanted to get to, Garrett asked, how many of these guys come back next year for us? And do you think we have a shot to get into the March Madness tournament? We already hit on the tournament, but in terms of guys that can come back, unfortunately, two guys that you would really want back cannot come back next year unless they snuck in some JUCO or D2 ball that we don't know about, and David Gasson and Coleman Hawkins. But Max Jones was a guy that was on that list that couldn't come back entering the year. But now you think of what Diego Pavia did for JUCO players and got them an extra year. There are Division II players that are trying to make that push. Max Jones is a guy that started his year and played a year of Division II basketball. I think K-State should fight tooth and nail to try and make sure you get another year for him, because he's been huge. You like what he does. Absolutely, you want him back. And this is a team playing that you want the roster retention and the consistency back next year. There are some teams where if you have, 10 bad apples, who cares? You'd rather bring in 7 good apples. This team right now, you've got enough guys that you want everybody back. So take as many as you can get. But outside of Hawkins and Gasson, really everybody else is going to be eligible to return next season. Again, I'm just kind of assuming with Max Jones that he will get an extra year, or hoping based off of some of the other things. I know like a Wisconsin DB in football already got a second year. So you'd think at some point that's going to come, that those guys get sweeping changes. It'll probably be a little bit more resistance from the NCAA, though, because they're going to be able to argue that, well, they already played NCAA basketball, as opposed to the JUCO guys are coming from a totally different governing body. But that's beside the point there. So that's where things stand for the roster moving forward. Anything else from this game, Fan, that stands out to you as important to mention before we wind down in the next 5 minutes?
Well, I think the other story to me is K-State making twos, finishing around the rim. K-State finished 63% from two-point range compared to 49% or 59% for Arizona. That was another strong area for the Wildcats, the Desert Wildcats, as I like to call them. And K-State finding a way to make shots around the rim at a higher rate and get in there. And a lot of that was Doug making those runners as well. Those were key. Someone in the chat, and I agree with this point, David Gasson, probably we kind of take for granted that he's going to score 15 points and get five rebounds. He had 16 and 7 tonight, even though he only played 23 minutes with foul trouble. He just continues to do it. He was 2 of 3 from the free throw line, and you'll take that from David Gasson, 7 of 9 from the floor. Super efficient. That's tough for any team to overcome. You just kind of take for granted how he does things. And he did a great job backing up Doug and really playing well in the second half when we needed some points down the stretch. David made some nice plays at the rim.
Yeah, absolutely. He was big and crazy that he was able to score like he did. He had obviously a great scoring week last week. It earned him Big 12 Player of the Week. So people are starting to fully notice it. I mean, early this season, I was saying, and now that K-State's playing better, he's going to have an even better case. But I was saying he really should have a chance at first team all Big 12. Yep. That's the kind of impact he's had this year. And the fact that he was able to show it like he did in the box score, despite only playing 23 minutes, is pretty impressive tonight. One thing that we've been following here at KSO is the Mr. 3000, AKA the Race for Eight. K-State now with their win tonight, they have moved into a three-way tie with a handful of teams moving up the standings to be in a tie for sixth. BYU, Baylor, K-State, all 7 and 6. Baylor has the tiebreaker over K-State. That means BYU, K-State this weekend is going to be significant for tiebreaker purposes, especially when you factor in that K-State already has it over West Virginia. They're going to be in this battle. Another team that could be in the battle would be TCU. K-State does have the loss there, so TCU's got the edge. So enough of that kind of stuff to make note. But as it stands right now, K-State would have the first day bye in Kansas City, not have to play on Tuesday, only have to play 4 games in 4 days if you're thinking about maybe winning the Big 12 tournament, which, again, at the end of the day, would be the easiest way to secure your spot inside the NCAA tournament. But K-State keeps playing like they do. They're going to have every chance to win every game remaining in front of them. And we'll just monitor it all. And we'll have the post game again on Saturday night late after the Wildcats and Cougars do battle. Both games starting, I believe, at 8 o'clock out in Utah. The Utah game, thankfully, got moved up a couple hours. That was originally supposed to start at 10. I believe. So fortunate for that one. We'll be live after both games doing this right here. I don't know if it'll be three of us this weekend. We could do that or how it'll work out, but somebody will be here with me. We'll talk about it. And if you want more post game from tonight's win over K-State, I know 25 minutes isn't nearly enough for an exciting win like this. Head over to kstateonline.com. If you're not signed up, do so. We'll have full post game coverage written there tonight into tomorrow morning. And plenty of coverage and time to recap tomorrow as the snow falls what went down tonight in Bramlage. So for KSU Fan, I'm Mason Vo. Thanks for watching K-State Online. We will talk to you again tomorrow, and especially after the game on Saturday against BYU as the Cats stay alive with their sixth straight win.